Good morning, and welcome to the Tuesday edition of The Morning Show, February 10th. It's February already. You would think, John, that winter would continue on at least through the month of February, but outside it sure looks like spring. What do you think?
It definitely looks like spring. I stopped by the garden center yesterday and sold a few fruit trees to people who wanted to be planting, and why not?
I know. Why not? Why not? With us in the studio this morning, I'm your host, Phil Huff, and with us in the studio this morning is perennial springtime guest, John Hastings. He's going to talk about the coral reef project he's involved with in a few moments. We are going to get to the weather first, though, to look at the ever spring-like conditions. I know you skiers don't want to hear that. It's a hard reality to face. We did hear forecasts. I heard forecasts of snow yesterday. And at my place, I woke up to just, I will say, a little bit of white stuff. It was like a flake every 4 inches. It was less than a dusting. What is less than a dusting?
The snow level was quite low yesterday. So I know, yeah. I don't know how much they got at Schweitzer, but they must have got some.
Maybe the mountains got some, and there's some salvation there for the slipping and sliding. For the rest of us, though, we have to get our vicarious joy through the Winter Olympics. But today we do have a forecasted high of 42 degrees this morning after patchy fog. And then in the afternoon, it's actually calling maybe for a little bit of sun, an overnight low, mostly clear, dipping down just below freezing to 29 degrees. Tomorrow, Wednesday, sunny and a high of 43. Tomorrow night, a patchy fog, then mostly clear with a low again in the high 20s. Thursday, we return to the 40s, and we sort of do this all week, highs in the 40s, lows in the high 20s. Chance of rain coming Friday, and again Saturday, chance of rain, maybe even a little bit of snow on Saturday, which is the start of Winter Carnival, so that would be good, propitious, as they say. We're going to move on to the show. Again, we have in the studio with us John Hastings, not sure what title to associate with you, retired educator continuing to do education and outdoor fun stuff with kids. John Hastings, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
We are going to talk about your coral reef project, but tell us a little bit about your background in education and in getting youth out engaged in environmental projects. Let's start there and then build into the thing you're going to do this spring, summer.
Yeah, so my wife Nancy and I, we moved here about 30 years ago. And for most of that, I was teaching at Sandpoint High School, retired about 2.5 years ago. Taught environmental science, forestry, horticulture, for the most part. And Nancy and I own All Seasons Garden Center, so that's I'm definitely not really fully retired, that's for sure. But when I was active in the classroom, it was definitely get kids out. And so we did a lot of major projects. Most of the revegetation of the Pack River Delta was done by students. We were active in the rare carnivore studies that Friends of the Scotchman's Peak sponsored. We had multiple bait stations out where students would go out and do things like that. We also did a lot of fun stuff, and we still kind of had...
Some of that was fun, too.
That was all fun. No, that was all very fun, but the intent was that there was some sort of mission behind that. Yeah. Some of the just-for-fun stuff that we would do. Rock climbing, you know, kind of whatever my passions were. So we did some rock climbing, backcountry skiing, just some easy day hikes too, and a little mountain biking and that sort of thing. So, it was a pretty active, club called the, Sandpoint Area Students Outdoor Adventure Club. And it still exists, but when I'm not in the classroom and have those connections with students, really what it is transitioned into is where it is just these summertime trips now that we're doing to work on coral restoration projects. And we've done a little bit of agroforestry, too, when we're in some of these climates. So, but that's where I've been. It's always been about getting kids active, getting kids out, getting kids working on projects. And I know I've talked to students who participated in that, and it's like when they drive by the Pack River Delta. We also were involved in the Clark Fork River Delta. That was a much bigger project. But when they drive by these places, they can see their handiwork, and they know that some of the work they did actually made a difference. It wasn't just an academic learning, although that was part of it. But it also was just that, yeah, your world's a better place for the work you did.
Yeah, there's a pride in that ownership. I know some of the students came out to do some trail work for the Scotchman Peaks group also, and In fact, I clearly remember the day that the task at hand was taking out old trail, as new trail had been built to replace that old trail, and they got to tear it off, scarify the ground with pickaxes and toss big limbs and branches and trees and just tear up the trail. They loved that.
That was, yes, some of that heavy manual work as opposed to the finesse of building new tread, huh?
Yeah. And it was for good purpose, too, so and extra credit, I think.
Yes, usually it was. It could impact their grade if they wanted it to.
Yeah. So fun and science and pride of ownership in actually helping restore things. Great, great concepts to carry forward into more worldwide adventures. How did you get first interested in doing coral reef work?
As I say, one of the courses that I taught was Advanced Placement Environmental Science, which is a college-level course. And when students were learning about, you know, everything in, as far as environmental science and what's going on around with planet Earth, when they specifically saw what was happening with coral reefs, they just couldn't believe it. They couldn't believe that in their lifetime it might be the end of coral reefs. And so they said, what can we do? What can we do? And again, with that emphasis on wanting to be hands-on, you've got the usual things. You can donate to groups that are working. You can vote for the right people who can make change. But let's see if we can do something hands-on. So I just got in touch with some student travel organizations and said, here's what we want to do. Can you help me do it? And yeah, and so we started doing these trips to first trip was to the Dominican Republic, and then coming out of COVID, we did a trip to Belize. It was deemed a little bit safer, not in terms of crime, but just in terms of pathogens. Mm-hmm. And then every year since then, we've been going back to the Dominican Republic.
And so the whole coral focus has been about 7 years then?
Yeah, that would be right. Yeah. Yep.
So why care about a bunch of rocks that are below the waves? People don't see them, even if they're traveling over on the cruise ships.
Yeah, if they're just casually on top, yes, they're not going to see them. But even just snorkeling, you know, when you go to any of these beaches, you see a lot of people snorkeling. You see a few people diving who really get to know them. But again, I think most people probably realize that these, what you might think of as dead coral rock, actually, they call it live rock. It's neither. I mean, it is alive, but it usually is dead corals that are covered in coralline algae. And the coralline algae is where new corals can attach and grow. And I think the students, when we first started doing it, it was just the notion that this is such an incredibly beautiful ecosystem, and we don't want to see it gone in our lifetime. And that was the motivation to get going. But of course, the more you learn about it, the more you realize the importance of these coral reefs in that they are the huge refugium of biodiversity when it comes to the oceans. There is a much greater concentration of life around coastlines and coral reefs than you'll find out in the open ocean. And I don't always like to just talk about it in human terms, but a strong case can be made because in human terms, it's a huge percentage. More than half of the Earth's human population is relying on seafood for a significant portion of their protein intake. And if coral reefs are gone, that will have a huge detrimental impact on the variety and numbers of sea life, which has then that direct, you know, value to humans in terms of it's a food that we eat. But again, I don't like to always think in those terms. I think that it should be allowed to continue just for its own sake, whether or not we used any part of it for human need. But a strong case can be made. These coral reefs need to be saved if we want to continue to have value to as a food source for humans.
Yeah, we don't really understand this interlocking web of biodiversity either, and what little chinks we pull out. It's like a Jenga thing, and which is the one that's going to cause everything to topple. And so we should be careful about what we pull out and what we try to replace.
Absolutely, yep.
So how did you settle on, of all of the tropics worldwide, the Dominican Republic?
I think the main reason for me, and of course I was the one making these decisions at the time, pretty much on my own, I wanted to be in a place that offered not only the opportunity to do meaningful work, but also a place that had a strong culture so that students from little old Sandpoint would experience a broader part of the world. And so I didn't want, you know, yeah, we could have done this we could have done it in Miami. Miami's reefs are probably worse than the Dominican Republic's reefs. We could have done that. But we would have been missing out on a cultural opportunity. Mm-hmm. And when I looked at a lot of different places, the Dominican Republic is kind of a sweet spot. And that is that, excuse me, it's what we would call, a developing nation. When you go to the Dominican Republic, there is wealth on the same level as what we see in the United States. I think the poverty is a little bit more extreme, but we see that income inequality everywhere. But it's very pronounced in the Dominican Republic. But because it's this developing nation, they certainly have all the infrastructure you need for a safe trip. And when it comes to things like crime, it's considered a very safe destination in that regard. And then they have, it's not like really famous for its coral reefs, but I was down there on a dive trip of my own, and I just happened to meet a woman who is a Canadian expat, and her little 500 yards of reef in front of where she lives was dying, and she wanted to do something about it. And so she and I had conversations, and so it was a really good fit for us to go to a place where we can do some meaningful work, and a place where they can experience another culture.
Yeah, great, great dual purpose. Certainly, some of the slides I've seen, stories you've shared in previous interviews and public presentations, it sounds like the kids and adults both come back really much more culturally enriched, learning a lot.
Yeah, they definitely do, and it's really interesting. Where we go on the north coast of the Dominican Republic is really the merging of many cultures. Particularly, there is the Dominican culture. Obviously, we are so close to the Haitian border that there is a Haitian culture there. There is so many expats from all over the planet. So when you go out, I mean, you will hear 6-7 languages being spoken. And there's one of the little towns that we do some work in. Actually, at the end of World War II, they had let all the Jews in Germany know, hey, if you need a safe place to live, come on down here. So there's a strong, there's a strong German immigration there, but particularly Jewish, because the Dominican Republic opened their doors to Jewish German immigrants if they needed a safe place, a new place to start over. So it's kind of funny, you're walking down the beach and there's all these little beach bars, restaurants and whatever, and there'll be a German bakery or there'll be a schnitzel house or all sorts of stuff which you would not expect to see. But like I said, there's just, it's such a melding of cultures that it's really a lovely place to spend time.
Yeah, great melting pot. So tell us a little bit about the work itself. Walk us through who you partner with down there and what the kids engage in, the activities.
We, one of the things that I think, for me, differentiates this trip from a lot of other student travel trips that are done with a theme of either oceans or coral reefs, is that, as I mentioned, Deborah Sorensen, the woman that we work with there's two sites that we work at, and one of them, Deborah Sorensen, it was a one woman show. She literally, a retired expat. She puts on her snorkel gear every day. She goes out and cleans the reef. She transplants corals. She's known locally as Gringa Fish, because she just spends so much time in the water. The little bay, Costambar Bay, where she works, is a marine sanctuary, but there's illegal fishing on a daily basis. So part of what she does is try to enforce that ban. She's a really salty woman, and she has had her life threatened because of the work that she does. But through a dive master that I was working with, he said, you should go see the work that Deborah's doing. So I did, and I just, over the internet, sent her an email, said, hey, could you use some help with what you're doing? I'd like to bring a group of students down. And she loved the idea. And on our first trip down there, we showed up. We were going to work with her for 3 days. I think we had 20, around 20 students. And she had 3 days of work lined up for us. And it's heavy, heavy work. I'll give you more details on later. But a lot of concrete moving and stuff like that as we're building structures for reefs to adhere to. By noon the first day, we had finished because the students were so motivated and they were so just they wanted to get in there and do the work. And it was fun because they didn't. A lot of the other student travel trips where you can see this happening, it's like they go to these coral reef restoration programs and they see the beautiful work that's being done. But when we go to this small little one-woman operation, we do the work instead of just see what's being done. So it was really a wonderful thing. She liked that. And just yesterday, she and I were again communicating on Facebook, wondering, you know, okay, when are you coming? When are we working? I'm starting to get the work lined up. So it's very small operation. And quite honestly, between a lovely thing about these trips is that a portion of each student fees are a donation to the organizations that we work for. Most of the income that she gets to work on that reef comes from the groups from Sandpoint who have been coming down there for several years now. She has just recently opened up a little foundation so other people can donate to it. The name of that organization is Costumbar Reef Healing. You could look that up on Facebook and see the work that she's doing. I'll also mention while I'm there, the Sandpoint Area Students Outdoor Adventure Club. The way to see more of the work we've been doing is to go to that Facebook page as well. Mm-hmm. And you'll see pictures from the last, you know, 7-8 years of the different kinds of work we've been doing there.
Have you seen progress?
Yes. One of the main things that we noticed, like the first year we went there, one of the things that we were told to do is everybody bring a toothbrush because the fish populations were so low that normally fish go along and graze the coral to keep the algae from developing on it. Because the coral, it's an animal, but it has algae in it, photosynthetic algae that are helping the coral live. If they get covered in the filamentous algae, then the green seaweed, if you will, then they'll die. Mm-hmm. And so without the fish to continually nibble away at that, that first year we spent quite a bit of time just snorkeling with toothbrushes, cleaning corals to keep the algae off them. Another thing that we did is we built some, made out of concrete and rebar, some situations that are all full of nooks and crannies in place for young fish to be safe from predators. The intent being that we would increase the fish population. The third year we went back, she said, you don't have to bring toothbrushes anymore because there's enough fish now. And I've had students go on multiple trips. They've gone over different years. And even the students will say, there wasn't this many fish last time we were here. So the emphasis is on coral reefs, but the fish are the gardeners of the coral reefs. So a lot of the work that we do is to improve fish habitat and let them do the work.
So you're building reef structure with the rebar and concrete, and you're cleaning with the toothbrush. And so these projects might appeal to students who are going on to conservation biology or marine sciences or even dental school.
Yeah, I wonder if that would help you with dental school if you get to skip one of the introductory courses if you've been cleaning corals. I'm not sure.
Advanced coral hygiene.
That would be it. That would be it. Yeah. But no, many of students who have gone on these trips have gone on to do similar kinds of work or certainly in environmental studies. I know I had one student who went on, got a degree. Many students who have participated in this have gone on to get degrees in marine biology or in wildlife biology or something like that. And I know we had one student a few years ago who, after she graduated from college, she got a job working for the United Nations doing ocean plastics research. I know I have another past student from one of these trips right now who's in Patagonia doing research on wildlife populations down there. Another student who went on one of these trips is one of the main educators over at the Seattle Aquarium now. Mm. So yeah, it's been good to see the lasting impact on a lot of students.
So the balance of going back to the same place versus, say, spreading the love around, tell us about the pros and cons of going back to the same place.
I think for me, the main reason is Deborah needs help. the woman who's doing this. Mm-hmm. And I know I had one student who she'd gone on the trip, had a marvelous experience. When she heard we were going again, she said, "Are you going to work with Deborah?" Mm. She didn't ask about any other fun stuff. Where are you going to stay? You know, are we going to do dance classes again, on any of that other stuff? All she wanted to know was, are we going to help Deborah again? Mm. And that's all she needed to know, that she wanted to be there. So yeah,
the relationships are important. That's helpful.
And it doesn't say it's one of those things that if we don't show up, the work simply doesn't get done. She has one part-time employee. Santos is his name, and he's quite a colorful character. Used to be a fisherman, but by working with Deborah has said, you know, rather than being participating on that, how about if you help me on the coral? So it works great. He's able to support his family, mm-hmm. and he's helping with the reef. There has been a lot increased enforcement of the fishing ban. Mm-hmm. There still is a lot of illegal fishing. Deborah's next project is hoping to raise enough money that there can be a night watchman mm-hmm. on this particular reef, because that's when most of the illegal fishing happens. So a quick little side story that was one of those amazing things that happens on trips like this is, this was maybe our third time down there, and she's always got everything ready for us to go, and she's talked to everybody. If there's permits, she's got permits, and we're ready to go. And we were getting ready to go into the ocean and start placing some more coral structures. And a big gentleman who was the head of the local fishermen's association said, "No, you're not." And he came in. He was going to stop us. He said, "You're not going to do this." I always work with student travel companies so that I'm not, you know, liable, if you will, but as a protective, and as well as then we have Spanish speakers with us. So we always have two or three in-country guides with us. Well, one of our guides that year happened to be an attorney who was very well connected in the Dominican government. And he likes to participate in trips like this to spread his culture. Mm-hmm. So he's not doing it for the income. But when this one gentleman tried to shut us down, he got his cell phone. Our guide got his cell phone out. He called what would be the equivalent of their Secretary of the Interior for the country, who was a close personal friend, and got him on FaceTime and showed him the phone there. And the president of the local fishermen's association just got silent and walked away, and we got to do our work. But that was just kind of happenstance that that's who we happened to have this year. Yeah. So,
well, that's fortuitous. But so why was the president of the fishermen's association trying to stop you all?
I'm not going to go into great detail. He was just not a nice person. Okay. is a part of it.
You weren't violating some closure order.
No.
Yeah.
No, okay. And that's the interesting thing. And I think that education that Deborah has done with locals has helped a lot in terms of what we are doing is not taking anything away. What we are doing, and meaning what Deborah is doing and then we're assisting with on these reefs, is we are increasing habitat for little fish. And dear fishermen, you probably know someday those little fish will be big fish and there'll be more of them. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing actually should be improving the fishing. The downside is because it's a protected marine area, the fishing is pretty good there. And that's why a lot of these fishermen want to fish, are willing to fish there illegally, because it is good fishing. But as the fish grow and get bigger, then they move out. And yeah, then the fishermen are welcome to them.
Well, that's a great story. And this is a good point to take a short break. We're going to listen to a little bit of Jimmy Buffett. I think on this track, he's playing with the Coral Reefer Band. But this is one of his songs that was certainly about the islands, and some say was actually about the Dominican Republic. So here's some Jimmy Buffett, and we'll be back right after. Jimmy Buffett and the Banana Republic. Does that get you in the mood for a little coral reef restoration, John?
It absolutely certainly does. I'm looking forward to this trip. Actually, we have another little family trip planned coming up, too, to a new diving site for me in the Sea of Cortez. I had a little hand surgery done, and the healing has not gone as well as I wanted it to. And my physical therapy said, you know, a week in the salt water, and that hand will be perfect.
Yeah.
So We had to. We didn't want to. We had to book this dive trip just for therapy.
I'm sure they suggested don't grab any stingrays by the tail.
Definitely not.
We're back, if you just tuned in, to the KRFY Morning Show here at 88.5 FM. And I'm your host this morning, Phil Huff, and we're talking with John Hastings, who every year takes a group of students and volunteers to the Dominican Republic to do coral reef restoration work. We've heard a lot about the project so far. If you missed that, you can listen to the podcast later. But we're going to pivot and talk about this year's project and volunteers. We didn't talk much about the volunteers, but it does take more than just you and the travel organization and 20 students.
Yes, we, and we'll talk a little bit specifically about some of the fundraising stuff that we do. The trip is open to anybody from the area. You do not have to be a student at Sandpoint High School. Most of the students who have gone have been. We have had adults come along, you know, as volunteers, not as chaperones. We have chaperones too. And since I am not in the building anymore, I've had different teachers, and or those teachers with their spouses come down as chaperones so that I have an in-building connection. It makes it easier with recruitment. But we have gotten to the point now, quite honestly, I mean, the trip in 2026 went viable, meaning I got enough people to do it within the first day that we offered it. And I think our trip for 2027 is about half full already too. Mm-hmm. So it isn't my intent. It's to be an annual thing. And again, the whole purpose for why I continue to doing it and going to this place is I want to see the coral reefs on this one little place in the planet get healthier again and help the one woman that's her mission in life.
Not a surprise that you'd have no trouble with student volunteer, adult volunteer, chaperone recruitment. So the students, you say, aren't only from Sandpoint High School. What are some of the other schools they come from?
Oh, there will be, the vast majority are students from the high school. And we have kind of limited it to that age group and above. So, I mean, adults can come, but we've had some homeschool people. We do have some people signed up for not this summer, but the summer after from the charter school. So we reach out to anybody. That's what we don't call it Sandpoint High School Outdoor Adventure. We call it Sandpoint Area Students. Mm-hmm. So it can be anybody.
Anyone.
Yeah. And I have had adults. I haven't done it yet. I've had enough adults who get so excited when they hear what's happening and the whole thing about the trip, you know, can we do an adult trip?
Yeah.
And I haven't pulled the trigger on that yet, but there's a lot of people who would be interested in seeing that happen. I'm not saying it won't happen because that would be an excellent thing to do as well.
That's a whole new level of complexity, especially with chaperones. So how do you did bring up fundraising. How do you support the trip? How does that work?
It's interesting that, again, some of the students really need help with fundraising. Some don't. I offer scholarships, and some of that fundraising has come from, I ref soccer, high school soccer, and I take all the proceeds that I get from that and put them into my scholarship fund for these trips so that students who, if dollars is the only reason they can't make it, we usually can get them through that.
So when you're issuing a yellow card, a penalty, it's not just a timeout. They got to pay to get back in the game.
Good idea. I haven't incorporated that. I'll have to talk to the State High School League about that and see if that's allowable.
Just kidding.
Here, let me write that down. Yeah. So the main fundraising that we've done over the years is we have hosted the International Wildlife Film Festival. And we have had it at the Panada. We have had it at Matchwood. We have had it at the Hive. So we've just tried some different venues depending upon dates and how it works out. The International Wildlife Film Festival has been great, and they're based out of Missoula, Montana, but they have decided not to do a roadshow anymore. To get rights to show films, they have to pay more money, and therefore they just don't do that aspect of it anymore. So I was searching for another film festival that I thought would be appropriate. And I think the one that I found is perhaps even more appropriate. And it's called the Trees to Seas Film Festival. And it's actually based out of Mexico. And it's kind of interesting when you go to their film library. We choose the films that you want to show at a film festival like this. You always have the choice. Do you want it in English or Spanish? Which is kind of cool that they have that option that you can get these films there. So the Trees to Seas Film Festival, it's going to be March 13th, which is a lucky Friday, the 13th, at the Matchwood Center is where we'll be back at the, I mean, not Matchwood, Heartwood Center. Did I say Matchwood before?
Yeah.
Sorry, I meant to say Heartwood. It's at the Heartwood Center. So that's where we'll be again on March 13th for the Trees to Seas Film Festival. And a wide variety of films, mostly certainly oriented towards coastal regions. One of the things I did not mention on some of the activities we've done before is plant mangroves, which, again, planting mangroves along the coast, it's just such an amazing thing to do because it prevents beach erosion, it provides habitat for young fish, it protects the human settlements from sea surges during storm events. It's just a wonderful thing. But, of course, a lot of those mangrove forests were taken out because tourists like to see white sandy beaches. And there still is plenty of white sandy beaches. There's amazing, pristine, undeveloped beaches in the Dominican Republic, which is kind of nice.
There's room for both.
But one of the films that we'll be showing is about mangrove restoration.
Very nice. So the date's March 13th. What time and how do people find out more about tickets?
It'd be 7 o'clock is showtime, probably doors opening at 6. Please bring your money if you're thinking of coming. There will be silent auction items and there will be raffle items and opportunities to just donate too if I don't need more stuff, And we're just getting started on the marketing of that. So the students that go on the trip will all have a packet of tickets that they can sell. And then, of course, then there will be tickets available at the door. The very first time we did this, we did it at the Little Panada, and we sold out. And so that's why we've moved on to other venues. So you don't need to worry about it. I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think we'll sell out.
Well, you're going to get the morning show bump. So
that's it. Okay, we'll be prepared for it.
Next year, the Rose Bowl. So we haven't even talked about the dates. What time of the year do you do this?
We always go right after school is out. And the reason for that is, graduation is a Friday, and we usually leave Sunday. It's an 8-day trip typically. This year we're going 9 days, and maybe we'll talk a little bit more about itinerary, but we've added another event, if you will, this year. But so we leave, day zero is what we call it. We're scheduled to be gone on that Monday, June 8th, I believe it is. But I always tell them, can we fly overnight? Because then we leave on Sunday and we essentially get a free day in the country, another free day. It's another reason when you're asking why the Dominican Republic, as far as going to a tropical place, it is fairly accessible. There's lots of international flights going into that space. And we think, when you think of going to the DR, you think we're going south, and yes, you are, but you're almost going an equal amount east. We kind of forget how far to the east that is. So we have a few time zones to the east. So it's that makes it a little more complex for travel, but it's worked out well for us to get there. But we spend, in that 8 or 9-day trip, we spend 3 days doing reef work. And two of those days are with Deborah, and then a third day is with another organization that's just about 100 miles down the coast. They're a little bit better funded, a little bit higher tech, so we kind of get to see that side of it too. They're doing a lot more with what we call assisted evolution, where they are taking coral fragments and raising them in aquariums, and they can adjust the heat in those aquariums so that they're breeding corals that will be better suited to the warming waters they're already here. They're not in our future. They're here now, but they're going to get worse as time goes on. So they're selectively breeding corals that are able to survive in slightly warmer oceans. So we get to see that side of it too. And actually, that organization supplies Deborah with a lot of the corals that we transplant for them up at that place. The other thing that's new this year, because originally I wanted to do this, I had some contacts, I'd met some people, but I'd never be able to work it out down in the DR. But this year, we're also spending a day volunteering at a local school. So I don't know what that's going to look like. That's a new thing to us. And the travel company that I work with, Offbeat Travel, is the one that's arranging all that. And an Offbeat Travel Company is a really boots on the ground sort of an organization. And their motto and what is on all their t-shirts and caps and everything, that their merch that they have, is decolonize travel. And it's to try and make the travel friendly to the country that you're going to. And they really only do the Dominican Republic, Puerto Rico, and Costa Rica is where they do some different trips to those. So they're all locals and they're great people to work with. And I got in touch with them because their pricing made it so much more affordable for more students to go. They don't do a lot of the bells and whistles and flashy stuff that some of the other student travel organizations do. They're all about making it very useful to the communities that we visit. And part of that is they're able to keep the prices very reasonable.
So you've got 3 days of coral reef volunteer work, a day in the schools. What are the other 4 or 5 days like?
We're busy. We're busy. There's a cool little thing. We do it every year. Kids love it. It's called 27 Waterfalls. And that's exactly what it is. It's a river and it's got 27 waterfalls. Although, as long as we've been going there, there hasn't been enough water to do all 27. It depends on the season and what's happening.
Hiking or kayaking?
You hike up. No, you hike up and then you body surf down.
Oh,
and, okay. And the waterfalls, that's usually kind of like a trenchy thing that if you want to slide down it, you can, or if you want to, they have a wooden platforms built out so that if you just want to jump off of it, you can. And, you know, the highest one is maybe 50 feet. So it's really a fun thing. In particular, you know, it's a hot, humid climate that sometimes we're not used to, and it's really nice to get in the water and do that. There's another place we go to, the caves of Cabarete, and similar sort of thing, except it's all underground and pitch black if you don't have lights on. But after a hot day of doing anything, it feels really nice. That water is so cool and cold, and you're out of the sun for a while. It's a lovely thing. And part of the cultural stuff that we do, we always do dance classes, salsa, lots of different things like that with a company there. And this doesn't happen every year. We're going to try and coordinate it a little better so we can make it happen again because it was so magical. And that was, we took our dance classes one day and found out that there was just kind of this pop-up dance planned for the, so on a beach in the middle of nowhere. There's no development around it, but they all come in with their vehicles. Food trucks come in. They brought in a wooden dance floor. And it's mostly, you know, tourists don't know about it. It's mostly just local Dominicans and expats. And so they told us about it. We came down, and that was one of the best cross-cultural experiences we've ever had.
Yeah. Boots on the ground. I like the name of the, not Boots on the Ground. What's the name of the travel company?
Offbeat Travel.
Offbeat Travel.
So good folks.
I'm imagining the Dominican Republic in baseball. Tell us about those activities.
Yeah, we don't get involved in the baseball. We could. But yes, the Dominican culture is amazing. And on any given year, it's somewhere between 10 and as high as 30% of Major League Baseball players here in the United States are from the Dominican Republic. And it's an island of about 10 million people.
Yeah.
So it's, but it's such a part of their culture. And that's both good and bad. There is so much pressure on young kids. The worst story I ever heard about that I can't imagine being in this situation, and that is that if you have brothers and one of them is identified as this guy might make it to the majors, well, then he gets shoes and the other kids don't. When he's done eating dinner, then the other kids get leftovers. And I can, and the idea is that this is going to be our ticket out of poverty. And sometimes that works, but not too often. But I can't imagine the dynamics in a family when you have to favor one kid because this kid might make it to major league. One of the things that we do too, along the same lines, is we take, it used to be a cable car. It's closed for repair. So now we drive up to the top of this mountain, Mount Isabel, and look out over all of the north coast of the Dominican Republic. And Puerto Plata is a city about the size of Spokane. It's a good-sized city. But I have the students all are up there. I said, look down on that city and count the number of state baseball stadiums that you see. And it's 11 last time I looked.
Wow.
So, and these are, you know, these are baseball stadiums with seating, and they're not just a baseball field. So there's just all sorts of minor league teams. And then, of course, they have their top league. But the ones who make it in their top league come here and play in the United States because the money is so much better. Yeah. But it is such a deep part of their culture. And not all of that is positive, quite honestly.
Yeah, good and bad. But those tickets out can increase competition. Yeah. Well, we're running towards the close of the interview. John, what other parts of the adventure would you like to talk about?
I guess, like I said, it's a great experience for kids from our area to experience a different culture, different climate, and then do meaningful work. They're not just looking at stuff and taking pictures. They are in the water. Doing the work. And if you listeners out there would want to see more of the work that's done, go to that Facebook page, Outdoor Areas, Sandpoint Area Students Outdoor Adventure Club. And you'll see lots of photos from all the work we've been doing over the years. And if you go way back, you'll see some of those other activities that we used to be doing when I was still actively teaching in the high school. So yeah, you'll see the work we're doing. And if you come on out March 13th, at Heartwood Center, we will show a film. There was a short film that was made about Deborah and the work she does. So you'll get to see specifically the organizations that we work with, and then just a whole lot more really good films about what's happening with coastal regions all around the planet.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a great time, lots of fun, and a great way to support a great cause. So stay tuned as you get more marketing materials out about that.
Yes. It'll be saturated as we get closer.
Yeah. Well, thank you, John, for coming on the morning show this morning. If you missed any of this interview, we've been talking with John Hastings, who runs the Coral Reef Project every year for Sandpoint Area students and volunteers. You can hear all of it at krfy.org on the podcast area. For now, I'm going to segue to a little bit of Bob Weir. Unfortunately, the late, great Bob Weir, most people know him, of course, with the Grateful Dead Band. He had a solo venture in the 70s, and one of my favorite tracks from that's Bomb's Way. I'll be back after that with upcoming events.